Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the misleading voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Oh, you've caught me on the hop now.
Have I?
What have I done?
Okay, I'm going to replay a little segment from the last podcast.
Okay.
All right, are you ready?
Yep.
Hang on.
But of course, if you've been embarrassed like this and you've conceded six goals, something just for the record that I don't know anything about, given that I never conceded more than four. But, you know, if you've conceded six goals in a game such as this.
Okay.
Okay, I've got a feeling I know where this is going.
Do you care to elaborate?
Do I care to elaborate? Right. Yes. What I meant to say is I haven't conceded goals in a 90-minute game.
Right.
That's what I meant to say. So I missed out a small but important section to that sentence. I do appreciate, and I hold my hands up.
Quite important,
yeah. But of course, extra time, an extra 30 minutes of a game is a huge additional chunk of a game. So to have never conceded more than four in 90 minutes is, you would agree, very impressive, I'm sure.
It is very impressive, but I don't think that you can lay claim to saying I've never conceded more than four goals. Oh, in 90 minutes.
I think it's a fair point. I think that if we're going to start including extra time, why not include penalties? Well, do you know what? I've included more if you include a penalty shootout.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a game. 2010 World Cup. There we go. 2010 World Cup between Holland and Spain. Martin Stecklenburg was the goalkeeper for Holland in that World Cup. Went to extra time.
Mm-hmm.
What? Some 5 minutes from the end of the game, from the end of extra time, Andres Iniesta scores past Martin Stecklenburg to make the score 1-0. How many goals does Martin Stecklenburg concede in that game?
Okay, right. I know where you're getting. As I said, when I look back, and obviously we're doing this as quickly as we are, and it's just off the cuff. And I mean, who knows where each show goes? And to be honest,
that's premeditated, though. To suddenly call out Manuel Neuer, who's conceded six goals in a game, for you to make a point of saying, by the way, that's something that I can't relate to because I've never done that before. That's not off the cuff. That is in your head.
Fine, Matthew. Okay. In that moment, it made me feel big. It made me feel clever to give Manuel Neuer a little bit of stick. But yes, the truth is there was one game, my last game, I did concede six, but it was an extra time. 4-4 at the end of normal time. Your regular kind of game. We drew 6-6. But you know the important point? We won the penalty shootout.
Did you?
We did win the penalty shootout.
How many penalties did you save?
I saved two. I mean, I was at fault for four during the game. So I guess, you know, I kind of made up for it a little bit in the penalty shootout. And the very next day, I decided that I didn't want to play anymore.
So I do know that we have touched on this before on the podcast. And I'm sure at some point, when we do the Richard Lee Goalkeepers Union interview special, we'll focus quite heavily on this particular game. But staggering that was your last game in professional football, 6-6.
Away to Dagenham and Redbridge on a Tuesday night. A real glorious way to put an end to things.
Okay, well, can we just accept that you admit you were wrong? You made a mistake. Goals in extra time do count to goals conceded by goalkeepers.
Yes, Matthew, I will admit that I misspoke.
This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast between the sticks. We have plenty, another bumper episode for you today, reacting to all the action in the Premier League, plenty in the Championship, League One and League Two, some saves of the week, some errors, some keeper capers, some commentary corners, all your usual stuff. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and please do so, by the way, because it's been delightful seeing the interaction on Twitter of late, Richard, and many of you are now submitting ideas for us on the podcast, because that is quite crucial. We watch as much as we possibly can, don't we? But there are some things that we miss. And as a result, those submissions that come in via Twitter, via email, are very, very helpful because they make their way into the podcast and you get a little shout out as well.
You do indeed. And actually, on a similar note, I just want to say a big thank you to our patron of the week, Alex Hutchins. As always, you can find out a little bit more information as to what we do on Patreon. There is some exclusive content, a few other bits and pieces. And to be honest, you're just helping us out in a big way, which is appreciated. What's the web address, Mr. Beadle?
Don't know it. No, still.
Still, it's not my domain.
No, Patreon. Oh, domain. There you go.
There you go.
Patreon.com/Goalkeepers Union. And on Twitter, you can find us at GK Union. On email, hello@goalkeepersunion.net. Commentary Corner. Straight in to Commentary Corner, Richard Ederson. Two goals conceded at the hands of Heung-min Son and Giovanni Lo Celso in Manchester City's defeat to Spurs. And don't we know it. Creepers, what a reaction this had both during the game and subsequently online. Commentary first, and then the tweets, and then your reaction on those two goals that he conceded. Gary Neville was the pundit on Sky Sports. First goal. I don't like Edison's position at all. No need to be out that far. He makes Son's mind up for him. Cancelo is left for dead by the fact Laporte pushes in towards Harry Kane. Once that happens, he can get back towards him, but the fact Edison's come out so far towards the edge of his box means Son has no option but to shoot. Second goal. Edison, his style, he charges out. When he gets it right, it looks good, but I don't think he needs to be that far out at all. If he stands in his goal a yard or so off his post, it's a lot more difficult for Lo Celso to make that happen. He makes his mind up for him again. It's through his legs. A small bit of time elapses. He then says, he always does this, don't he? He has a little musing, comes back to him. Still think the goalkeeper has a large part to play in this goal. Charging out like that and making the mind up for the striker. Got to do better. Better decisions. It was rash. Can't charge out at everything. Make the player who's going to shoot beat you. Make it more difficult for him. Tends to smother far too often when it's not there to smother.
Yeah, no, initial reaction for me is the first one, I think there's a point, which I will explain and give a little bit more detail to that shortly. Second one, I don't think there is necessarily. Again, I've got a reason for both. I actually want to elaborate on both of these. We're going to read out some tweets and then I will fire away.
The responses we got on Twitter tended to agree with Gary Neville. JB, yes, agree with him on that one. Jordan Toddy says, for once, a pundit is correct about a goalkeeper. MBGK Academy, sadly, this time I also agree. High start position leads to the engagement. How he plays and his style, ultimately, pros and cons. Covering defender, though, allows Edison, if wanted, to drop and defend the goal. RWC49, yep, great passer, though. Jonathan Ellerton says, yes. Suleiman says, just what I said to my boys. John G, correct. Mark Nadin, 100% awful positioning. John Duffy, for once, he is right, should have backed off. Owen Slattery, in fairness, he had the angles closed. If only the same could be said about his legs. Neil Ince TKS says, can't disagree, don't need to commit that early. No mention of it at all on Match of the Day, but had it been Pickford, I'm sure it would have been criticised. And Ozzy Ardiles, not the Ozzy Ardiles, sadly, if he hadn't have rushed out, Son would definitely have taken another touch. More valuable time for the keeper to set himself. No need to have rushed out.
Clean sweep, I think it's fair to say. Okay, so my thoughts are, first one, two scenarios. One, if you don't have the defender there, then I actually believe the positioning is okay. I think to engage and to get as close as he did, I think it would be okay. Not necessarily preferable to being that little bit deeper. And I'm going to speak a little bit about probability, because ultimately what goalkeeping is for me is probability. You're going to take up a position that will give you the best chance of making a save. There was actually, I'm going to digress slightly, but I'll come back to my point. There was a couple of goals I saw elsewhere, like a classic example of a goal that might be a certain type of keeper is one that smashed in from close range that goes in the top of the net. Similar to the Ryan Giggs against Seaman back in the day, if you remember that goal. Now,
scored an extra time, that goal, by the way. Does that mean that David Seaman conceded
it?
Okay,
I see what you're doing there. Well done. Okay. Well done. You're enjoying this. Is this because I was calling you Ben the whole of the last episode? Is that what we're doing right now? Right. My point was going to be that a certain type of keeper might make that save. But the way that David Seaman played, it wasn't the type of save he'd make. But he makes a lot of other saves because of his style, as an example. Now, Edison has had this style. The ironic thing is that Gary Neville's saying this, and of course, who did he play with? Well, Peter Schmeichel, who was known for doing that and was brilliant at coming out and spreading. So for me, goalkeeping, go back to my point, it's about probability. Now, the reason the first one wasn't the correct decision was the fact that the defender was covering. The fact the defender was there, he didn't need to engage, and he could have been that little bit deeper. And of course, it would have been a completely different situation. He still might fire it hard into the corner. We've got to remember that it's not going to be the same strike. I think people kind of have this misconception that if he was deeper, well, it just would have bobbled into his hand. Of course it wouldn't, because the whole situation changes and he may still score. But I believe in terms of probability, he would have had more chance if he was deeper. The second one, however, and this comes back to the same point, is that how often does he make that save? Given that he managed to get within, what, a yard, 2 yards of the person striking the ball, at point of impact, it was okay. He was close enough to do the long barrier to spread in the way he did. And you could argue that he was unlucky that it went through his legs. Now, if he makes that save, we're saying that it's a great save. But again, it comes back to probability. The reason that he will get some criticism like he has is that it doesn't look good when the ball goes in as slowly as it does and in the center of the goal. But of course, that's just a result of him being as advanced as he was. So if he's that little bit deeper, again, it changes the whole situation and it might be that they fire it in the corner, but it just simply comes back to probability. Now, I know there are certain people out there, and we'll probably touch on some of the tweets. I know John Harrison had a bit to say, and there's a few others that we saw, where you could argue that the probability is you make more saves if you're deeper. Now, if that is the case, then yes, that's how goalkeepers should do it moving forward, you would argue. But at the same time, I have seen Ederson make so many saves performing this technique. I did see Peter Schmeichel make so many saves with that technique. Joe Hart is also well known for it in terms of coming out and spreading in that fashion. Now, it's fair to say as well that players are getting better. And actually, we saw a good finish in the game between Aston Villa and
Brighton.
We saw a good finish where it's a good example where, again, the standard of finishing is getting better. And when the keeper's coming out that little bit further, the ability to go round the keeper for one, the ability to dink the keeper, the ability to slide it past the keeper seems to be better than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. So that could be an argument that actually now goalkeeping is changing, that coming out, rushing out might not be a valid technique moving forward. Now, look, I appreciate I've spoke a lot there, but hopefully there's some sense behind all of that in that. Come back to my initial point. It comes down to probability. I think to this point, Ederson has done very well with that technique. But after this game, it might be something that he does just give a little bit more attention to. Because I think certainly with the first one in particular, his tendency is to come out and spread whenever he gets the opportunity. He's very, very brave in terms of how he keeps goal. But now that he's not getting as much success with it, it wouldn't surprise me if he's having a good chat with the goalkeeper coach today about it.
There is always sense in what you say, Richard.
Thank you, Matthew.
And to look at some of the other games this weekend is quite interesting when you make a comparison on this, because in the game last night between Leeds and Arsenal, Ilya Melier denied Bukayo Saka with a similar situation. Emi Martinez made a very good stop in a similar scenario as well. He made that with his feet, rushing outside of the box. There was one in League One with Burton Albion and Ben Garrett, who rushed out and actually conceded in their game against Northampton. We've got Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, who we might just touch on with keeper capers. But there was also an incident after Son had scored in the second half where Ederson did rush out and Son tried to take it round him and took a far too heavy touch. Now, you could say Ederson was fortunate there, but you could also say because of the fact that Ederson rushed out, it actually made Son far more aware of him and therefore tried to get out of the way of him. When you've got a massive goalkeeper like Ederson rushing out at you at pace, you are not going to want to go 50-50 in that challenge.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And these are the bits that might get missed when something like that happens. That could be looked at in a negative sense, but actually the result was incredibly positive. If he doesn't come out, it might turn into a very, very dangerous situation. And let's not forget as well that a lot of this will be dictated by the manager. Pep Guardiola has a certain way of playing, and he'll want a goalkeeper that's playing on the front foot. Now, there are pros and cons to that, and this isn't necessarily defending Ederson on the first one, because I've made my point in regards to that. But of course, if you're telling your goalkeeper to always be on the front foot, then it may well be planted in his mind, and at times he may make the wrong decision in a positive sense because of that style of play.
Yeah, it's an ongoing discussion. I imagine it won't be the last time that we talk about this. You mentioned John Harrison as well there with some tweets that he puts out. John Harrison does some stats work for us here at GK Union. And he said last year, Ederson, was the best goalkeeper at saving one-on-ones within 13.5 yards of his goal, as he saved 76% of them. But for long-range one-on-ones, he only saved 50%. When he chooses to wait deep, he saved 5 out of 6. But when he's rushed out, like he did with Son, he's only saved 2 out of 8.
So this is why I love stuff like this, because this is what fascinates me. The fact that he's the best at one-on-ones when he's slightly deeper in his goal, but he's 50%. Well, look, the bit I'd love to, and I'll probably ask John this just to get a comparison. My guess is when you're doing a one-on-one and you're a bit further out in your box, the chances are it's a breakaway. The chances are that strikers will score the majority of one-on-ones when they're bearing down on a goalkeeper who's coming to the edge of his box to try and make the save. So actually, look, if 50% puts him down in 16th, 17th in the league, then yes, absolutely, he needs to change that technique. But for what we know, 50% could put him in the top few, which if that is the case, then we're now arguing that he's the best at one-on-ones in the Premier League. Well, if that's the case, then you've got to put up with this to an extent, because statistically, it's just been proven there, according to John Harrison's stats, that he is the best when it comes to one-on-ones within 13 yards of the goal. So this is where I think we need to be careful. Yes, at times goals might not look so good, but if we're talking that he's one of the most effective goalkeepers in that situation, then I think you just have to accept it to an extent.
Should we touch on Ter Stegen now? I said keeper capers, but we've got a few others. So let's do Ter Stegen in Barcelona's defeat to Atletico Madrid. It was the only goal of the game scored by Yannick Carrasco. Ter Stegen was miles out of his goal. And the thing that that I noticed most from this was that in his attempt to tackle Carrasco, he actually tackled like a... He spread. He didn't actually try to tackle him. He spread as if he was in his box.
Yeah, I know it was. It's, look, you don't learn to tackle necessarily as a goalkeeper. So he's done exactly that. He's spread. And you don't see that technique from any outfield player in an attempt to make a tackle. So it was quite unusual to see that so far from goal. And I'm saying this without knowing exactly what Barcelona's mentality is now, but ordinarily they're not the type of team that will hold on for a 0-0. They're going to try and push for a 1-0 win, and they'd rather have the odd defeat knowing that they're going to get many more victories in playing this way. So, look, it's not a great moment for Ter Stegen. You could see that he was disappointed with it, but I think there is a bit of a subtext to this that we do need to consider.
On to Manchester United's win over West Brom. First, before we do that, can you just get your phone out, please?
I believe phone out right now.
I sent you a message over the weekend regarding this particular game before the game was taken. Can you read it, please?
I can. It said, "Also, I'm calling a match-drawing performance from Sam Johnson this evening." These are the kind of messages we exchange.
This is how thrilling our friendship is.
So, essentially, what you're saying is that you were incorrect.
Yes. So kind of like you were at the beginning of the podcast. Mm. But my point being that you could just see it, couldn't you? Sam Johnson returning to his old club, Manchester United, hasn't had the best start to the season, an indifferent start to the season for Sam Johnson. West Brom have conceded a lot of goals. The way United have been playing, you just thought he's going to go there. I thought this is going to be a classic 0-0, similar to the way Tom Heaton played for Burnley a few seasons ago when he made that brilliant save from Zlatan that we spoke to him about on the podcast. You thought this was going to happen. It did happen, to be fair. And had it not been for a quite remarkable decision, not remarkable, it is what it is, isn't it? And we'll get on to that. And I'm sure you're going to want to bleat on about your penalty ideas that you've got. But a great performance from Sam Johnston. Really, really good to see. And very unlucky with the penalty that he conceded.
Yeah, no, excellent performance. And just before I touch on his performance, someone that is due to come onto the podcast in the coming week or two. In fact, we should be recording this weekend, Matthew. So that will be an interesting one to dig into the mind of Sam Johnson. So be sure to keep an eye out for that. But no, look, fantastic performance. A very intelligent performance, I'd say. You know, you go through some of the saves, and how many saves were there in the end?
It was six or seven. I'm going with seven. Mm. Might be eight because of the fact that he did save Bruno Fernandes's penalty.
Yeah.
And it was obviously retaken, which he spoke about quite loudly on social media, and good to get a lot of reaction to that from that initial tweet that was put out by Adam Sells of Sells Goalkeeping, of course, another gent who will be on the podcast very soon.
But yeah, you can't count the save that he made that then wasn't given, because that'd be like counting extra time as part of 90 minutes. Anyway, no, Sam was excellent. Look, I touched on the fact that it was intelligent. What I mean by that was, you know, certain parries, like he didn't make them look overly elaborate when he could have, but he was just parrying into good areas, very sharp down to his left, the save that he made in the first half. But again, you could see that he's almost read it slightly, otherwise I don't think he'd have time to react and get himself down there. And I just thought all afternoon he just looked very, very assured. And you mentioned it's been an indifferent start. It's obviously been a really tough start for West Brom. The fact they didn't get a result or didn't get a win, sorry, in the last four games of last season, and now they've gone this run so far in the Premier League without picking up that victory. But they have been in a lot of these games. The fact they only got beaten by United by the single goal, beaten by Tottenham by the single goal. Of course, they have picked up three draws. You feel like they're close, but at the same time, my worry for West Brom on the whole is similar to what we had at Watford. We went the first 10 games of the Premier League season without getting a win. And when it starts to drag like that, all of a sudden, it does start to creep up on you, and things can start to go the other way. So I hope for West Brom's point of view, they're able to pick up that win soon. And similarly for a goalkeeper, I know we're going to touch on Aaron Ramsdale, where there's a similar mentality, and it can be tough when you feel like you're having to have world-class game after world-class game to potentially even pick up a point, or in this case, not pick up anything. So I just hope from Sam's point of view, he's able to keep the mentality that he's obviously got at the moment, because I thought he looked really assured. One of the best goalkeeping performances of the season, I think it's fair to say.
Okay, do you want the floor? Shall I give you the floor?
Yes.
Regarding penalties and what you think should be done.
Yes, right, here goes. And I know some of you guys have heard this before, so I'll apologise in advance. But okay, so I'm going to give you my concept to what I think should happen when it comes to penalties, because what we've got at the moment just doesn't work. It's as simple as that. For a goalkeeper, it's nearly impossible now to save a penalty where you've got the taker doing whatever they want, hop, skip and a jump before they actually kick the football, and meaning that the goalkeeper, if you do move early because you're tricked by what's going on in front of you, you are then punished. So to actually save a penalty has become harder than it ever has been before. So what I suggest is essentially everybody set up for the penalty. Goalkeeper on their line, taker ready to take the penalty, people on the edge of the box as they ordinarily would be. And I think the moment the referee blows the whistle, it's live. And the reason behind this is that it's black and white. And actually, does it change things? Yes, of course it does. Because the second it's live, the keeper can do what he wants. The people encroaching can do what they want. The taker obviously only has a small amount of time in order to take the penalty. Now, I appreciate I'm saying this from a goalkeeper's point of view, so I'm slightly biased, because this would, of course, give the goalkeeper a better chance of making the save. But it also just make it fairer. In general, the fact that there's a penalty every two games at the moment, more penalties than there ever have been before, the reward is way too high. So, of course, teams are playing for penalties, knowing that they're 90% likely going to score the penalty. At least with this, it will give us something that's black and white. And from a goalkeeper's point of view, you've actually got a chance of making a save now. And if they do the hop, skip and a jump, that's up to them. But they're going to have pressure from behind. You could potentially come out and try and make the save. And rather than it being 90% of penalties scored, it might reduce it to 80 or 70 and make it a little bit more of a challenge, given that there are so many penalties being given right now.
Okay, I'm going to let you have it and move on. We've done this before. I will mention what Adam Sells said as well. Sam Johnston actually responded to the tweet that Sellsy put out, and it got a huge reaction of people suggesting what they think should happen with penalty kicks. But Sellsy said, "For many years, I have held the view that the keeper should be allowed to move anywhere in the 6-yard box from a spot kick."
Yeah, I mean, look, it would change the dynamic of a penalty. I know a couple of people pointed out the fact that then, would it then just mean that the goalkeepers moved to the six and started on the 6-yard box and we might have a similar issue? Look, I think essentially we've got similar ideas in that, and we are doing this, of course, from a goalkeeping point of view. Don't get me wrong, I get that. But at the same time, it just isn't fair. It's as simple as that, especially when you've got a taker like Bruno Fernandes, and there's a lot that now are adopting that penalty technique, which essentially means that if a goalkeeper moves at all, they see it and they put it the other way. Well, if you are absolutely statuesque on your line, then of course, providing they put it anywhere near the post, it will be a goal. And these are Premier League footballers, world-class footballers, who can do that 100 times out of 100. So what ends up happening is the likes of Bruno Fernandes, very, very rarely will they miss a penalty. And that then causes an issue in that there are too many penalties being given. So of course, if you're a team, you're going to be playing for more and more penalties, given that it's getting easier and easier to score. I just think the rules in recent years, the tweaks that they've made, haven't benefited the goalkeeper at all. And again, we are saying this from a goalkeeping perspective, but I just think it would make it more exciting, more interesting. And actually, I wouldn't be so fussed that VAR is given a penalty every other minute at the moment if we had a bit of a better chance of making the save and the rules were slightly adapted to give us that chance.
Okay. We should also reference David De Gea.
Brilliant.
Two very good saves at 0-0. Bottom hand down to his right from Carlon Grant in the first half, and a classic David De Gea foot save, his left foot save from Connor Townsend.
So this touches on the point that I made earlier, that certain styles will suit certain goalkeepers in certain situations. Because do you know what? That save with his foot, not every goalkeeper makes that save. They don't make the save when the ball's fired in low into the corner like that. If you're a goalkeeper that's going with your hands, you probably won't have time to do it. So of course, going with his feet, that was the perfect technique for that moment. But of course, we have then touched on times where it's let him down. And this also then goes back to the argument about Ederson. You know, Ederson comes out, makes a save. We're saying how great it is. David De Gea adopts this technique that at times is criticized, but when he does make saves like this, there are not many goalkeepers in the world with that flexibility, speed of feet, that can get their foot out there that quickly to make that save. So I think we have to credit him when his technique, which is different, but when his technique works like this. And I thought he was superb. And I think he's doing quite a good job at the moment of gradually rebuilding his reputation. He's doing it quite quietly, where he's having games like this, where he is making a couple of key saves and he's getting through each game, fending off Dean Henderson, of course, who has been linked, we see, in recent week or two with a potential loan to Celtic. So the fact that he's able to sort of keep him at arm's length, I think we do need to give David De Gea some credit. So I think a lot of people thought by now that Dean Henderson may well have forged his way into that team, but certainly David De Gea is doing a good job of retaining his place at the moment.
We've had a tweet in, Richard, from Michael Adams, who says, did you see Ramsdale's body language after his long ball went right to Koufal, which led to the goal? This is the game between Sheffield United and West Ham yesterday. Sebastien Haller with the only goal of the game. Michael says, when I do that, it's because I feel that nothing is going my way. What's going through his mind in this run of form for Sheffield United, and how does he get rid?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a great tweet. That's the impression that he's giving. And to be honest, to an extent, it's fully understandable. He actually had a really good game, it's fair to say, on the whole, I thought, and certainly made an excellent save down to his right, didn't he, in the first half. But this is one of those moments where there's nothing wrong with a kick. Obviously, it's a pass back, isn't it? Good touch. And he's cleared it upfield, cleared it a long way. And of course, there was nobody in that vicinity. West Ham pick up the ball a couple of passes later and it's being fired. Brilliant finish, by the way. He gets fingertips to it. Unlucky not to keep it out. No fault, in my opinion, at all. But it must feel like that. And it's frustrating for a keeper. I remember games I've had that where you have cleared it or you've kicked it long and they've come straight back at you and scored. And then you're questioning yourself thinking, oh, do you know what? Should I have done something slightly different? Well, you could always argue, yes, I should, but this comes back to the fact that there's only so much you can control. You can get a good clearance away, which I think he did. Yes, ideally, if he could have got it to his striker, but that wasn't realistic given the angle that he was being closed down from. So I don't think there's any fault of his, but you can sense or you get the impression, and again, we're assuming here, but looking at his body language, it must be tough because he's playing in a team, similar to what I mentioned about Sam Johnston, playing in a team that at the moment, you have to have a world-class game, keep a clean sheet, and even then, that might only be good enough for a point. We've all been in teams like this at some point, and it's very, very tough. It can be a little bit extra pressure than you normally feel, given that you feel you have to be absolutely on it every minute of every game.
Nice. Elsewhere in the Premier League, another good performance from Carl Darlow. Newcastle lost 2-0 to Chelsea, but he is really staking his claim for that first team spot, isn't he, when Martin Dubravka comes back. And Matty Ryan, an unorthodox save from Tyrone Mings with his left shin. You could see on TV that he was actually giggling once he'd made this. Brilliant save.
It was a fantastic save. He actually made a really good one down to his left just before that. But this one I enjoyed because ball's looped to the far post and he's done a Schmeichel-esque star jump initially, thinking that the attacking player might be heading it towards goal. But of course, that doesn't happen. It's dropping in the corner. And while he's in midair, he's managed to move his body ever so slightly in order to get a foot to it or a shin to it, as you say, and then clatter into the post. It was quite a comical moment, but at the same time, it was an excellent save. You know, to be able to do that, go from a star jump effectively to then manipulate your body in such a way to keep the ball out of the net. This, for me, sums up goalkeeping. Look, it's not always textbook. Every now and then, you just need to find a way.
Great improv from Matty Ryan. Great improv. And Anthony Kelly has tweeted in as well and says, am I mental? Even though we won 3-0, I still think Schmeichel had a good game. Referring to Kasper Schmeichel losing to Liverpool yesterday, 3-0.
Yeah, a couple of brilliant moments. I mean, the save that he made, that melee towards the end, just a mental sequence of football. But there was a couple of very good saves in that. And again, we talk about him quite a lot now on this podcast because I just think that, and I say underrated, and I don't know. I mean, that's obviously he is highly rated. Of course he is. But he is a fantastic goalkeeper. And I just feel that year in, year out, he's so consistent, so few errors. And you look at his game, he's got everything in his game. And he's a big personality as well. I just think at times, for me, he maybe doesn't quite get the plaudits that he deserves. But yeah, fantastic goalkeeper and another very, very solid game.
Before we commence with Richard Lee's championship rundown, it is time, Richard, for Text Talk. The new feature and this week's voice note stopper is none other than Asmir Begovic. Two talking points from Bournemouth's comeback victory over Reading at the weekend.
Indeed. The first one, the penalty that he gave away. And we were talking at the time. We do tend to spend our Saturday exchanging WhatsApps and voice notes. And I actually sent you the voice note saying, I don't know what he can do there. Now, for those that haven't seen it, it's hard to explain because it's a very unusual situation for a goalkeeper to find themselves in, where effectively the player is coming in from such a tight angle that you're not able to dive to your left and smother the ball. You can't dive to your right and smother the ball. You potentially could come out and do a long barrier, but then they could try and go round you and slot it in. So effectively what Asmir's done was exactly what I think most people would do, which is almost diving forward to try and get his hands to the ball because the ball's there. He can see the ball and he tries to dive forward like you would into a swimming pool almost. You know, he's trying to sort of dive forward to get it. So it looks really awkward because what ends up happening, of course, the player just manages to tow it away from him and he then tumbles over Azmir and it's a penalty, of course. But I've watched this so many times and I personally don't know what other technique you can do in that moment when you see the ball like that. Now, maybe the only thing I can think of is that he doesn't engage and he literally just creates a barrier. But of course, then if he waltzes around him and puts it in the net, we're saying, why didn't he engage? So I felt for Azmir on this one and it was really interesting to hear Azmir's thoughts.
So the penalty was a really weird and awkward situation. It starts from a throw-in, ball gets thrown in and we miss a couple of tackles by the byline and the striker comes in at me by the byline, which difficult situation, takes a touch. My mind, do I go and spread and take everything, commit myself, or do I wait and see what happens? And I waited, I hesitate a little bit. I then go for the ball, it takes another touch. I go after the ball, and of course, then the striker, quite a clever move, bumps into me and obviously makes the contact, which the referee is always going to see and give a penalty in that situation. So difficult one. You know, I'm going to have to look at it again and see what I can do better. But sometimes, you know, you can't get out of the way and disappear, so it's a really tricky one.
So that was the penalty. He made a brilliant save late on in the game. It was 3-2 at the time. Reading had taken a 2-0 lead. Bournemouth had fought back. Brilliant goal from Lewis Cook. But it was 3-2. Reading had a corner. Header, great save.
Yeah, phenomenal save. And it reminded me in a small way of a save years and years ago. And you'll remember this save. In fact, I think a lot of you guys remember this save. Don Hutchinson against Peter Schmeichel. Do you remember that one?
I do, yeah, 92, 93. Actually, brilliant thing of that was Peter Schmeichel. Those were in the days when goalkeepers wore the same kit as the outfielders. So he'd had the, I think Schmeichel was in the green Umbro top that United had that year. It was the one that went around all the clubs who had... You shouldn't have asked me this question, should you, Richard? You shouldn't have asked me this question.
I love how it just sets you off. Yeah. But do you know what I would say? I actually think it was the white kit.
No, it wasn't. It was the green one. Ooh. It was the green one with the sort of flashes on it. And he was wearing the blue shorts that the outfielders were wearing as part of that blue and black flecked kit that United only wore for one season. But he had the shorts and the socks that the outfielders were wearing. But he had the green goalkeeper top, which is funny because we romanticise about that. But realistically now, when you look at goalkeepers, they look much smarter, don't they, in the monochrome and the all ensemble. But back then, it was all over the place, but we loved it.
Do you know what we should have as one of our sections, like a memory lane, a trip down memory lane where we go into detail about one of these saves? I'm sure a lot of you guys can remember this save. I'm convinced it was the white top. We're going to look at this in a minute and see who is correct.
It absolutely could not have been because it was the 92-93 season and the white top didn't come in. He's talking about one with a almost like a polar neck collar, which you had a button on. No. 93, 94, that came in.
Okay, we'll check this out in a minute. Anyway, get back to the point, which was Azmir Begovic's save, which was, and the reason it reminded me of that was, I don't know how he's got down to it so quickly, because it's a firm shot down to his left. Two bits of this, by the way. Firstly, phenomenal save. Second bit, I was convinced it's a goal. Like, I've seen it a couple of times since. Now, they did the goal line technology and proved that it wasn't. But you know when you first see it, and you see it again and again, and you feel like it's gone over at one point. How have you managed to get that out using your hand, your face, your whatever you did in order to do it, and then get it round the post and have the awareness to get it out and get it out of play? Unbelievable save. And I'm delighted to say that we've got Azmir's thoughts on this as well.
I mean, it's pure reaction. It's pure muscle memory. It happens so fast that you don't really think about it too much. It's just one you react for and hope your reactions are fast enough. And thankfully aware to make that save. And then, you know, hits the post off my face. And then you kind of scramble to get it out. So really important save. And obviously one we train for a lot. And that's a crucial time to help your team at 3-2. And then we go to the other end and score the 4-2. So huge save, of course. And, you know, just obviously very pleased to help the team in a big game, get a result that we wanted and help push us on forward up the league.
Okay, so that was Azmir. Now, in the time that voice note has been playing, Richard Lee has got his phone out. He's scurrying around. I'm telling you right now, you do not need to check it. I am 100% right. I will put anything on this. The save you're thinking of was a 2-1 win for Manchester United, right? Mark Hughes put United ahead. Ian Rush equalised and Brian McClair scored the winner. Peter Schmeichel was in the green Manchester United goalie top. The top you're thinking of, which was a brilliant goalkeeper kit, didn't come in until the following season was used for 93, 94, 94, 95.
Okay, there's a chance you're right, but I'll tell you what, let's just skip on. We've got so much to get through today. People aren't interested in what top Peter Schmeichel was wearing back then. Let's crack on with the show.
He had to try and prove that he was right. He had to. Sometimes, small wins. I pick my battles, and sometimes
The fact you even got the colour of the shorts right, that he was wearing the outfit short, I don't know if I should be impressed or worried.
Let's move on. Brilliant to hear from Asmir Begovic. We have to touch on Rafael as well, the Reading goalkeeper, for the final goal, because he rushed out of his goal. He lost possession to Dominic Solanke. He was at fault. We're not defending Rafael here, but what we both thought about this one was the fact that none of the defenders, Liam Moore namely, didn't go and help him out. Surely in that scenario, it would have been better to have doubled up on Solanke.
Yeah, the whole situation was just mental to me. The whole sequence seemed to take so long. He's there battling away to try and win the ball back. And it just felt like everybody stood there watching.
It was like kids in a playground. You know when people used to have fights in school and they never really had a fight? They basically would just headlock each other and roll around and be the first one to submit. Or until they both went, we're done with this, I think let's just agree to disagree. It was that, and Cabral sort of went round in circles around Solanke. Horrible to watch.
It really was. It was. I felt for him. I mean, as you mentioned, it was an error. I'm sure he'll hold his hands up to it. But yeah, he must have been slightly disappointed at the fact that nobody helped him out whatsoever.
Okay, it is time for Richard Lee's Championship Rundown.
It is indeed. We'll touch on the game at St Andrews, that kind of random game at St Andrews, with Birmingham, of course, being the away team. We'll make a note of Morosi and Etheridge, two clean sheets, of course. Mention that Asmir Begovic and Bournemouth had a good 4-2 win over Reading. A clean sheet for Jack Walton in Barnsley's 2-0 victory over Nottingham Forest. Another clean sheet for Dan Bentley, Bristol City beating Derby 1-0. Luton and Blackburn fought out a 1-1 draw. There was a very strange moment in the Middlesbrough versus Norwich game, which we're definitely going to touch on, involving Tim Krul to an extent. An unusual misjudgment from Alex Smithies in the game between Millwall and Cardiff. That finished 1-1. Clean sheet for Declan Rudd. Preston beating Sheffield Wednesday 1-0. Of course, Kieran Westwood was recalled for Sheffield Wednesday. We'll be touching on that. QPR and Watford drew 1-1. An excellent save from Ben Foster in this one. Stoke beating Huddersfield 4-3. Joe Bursic making his debut for Stoke. Of course, making his debut for England under-21s this week as well. A huge week for him. They did win 4-3. And Pereira played for Huddersfield. Swansea beating Rotherham 1-0. A clean sheet for Freddie Woodman. A tough afternoon for Mr. Blackman. We'll touch on this as well. Wickham and Brentford 0-0. Clean sheets for both keepers here. And just to touch on the best of the rest in the EFL, a great penalty save from Jack Bonham in Gillingham's 1-1 draw with Charlton. Good performance from Ben Amos in this one as well. Another clean sheet for Toby Savin of Accrington Stanley against Lincoln. Only good enough for a point in that one. And a clean sheet for Connell Truman of AFC Wimbledon away at Rochdale. And just to touch on League 2, a special mention for Matthew Jilks, who once again played, and another win for Bolton away at Stevenage, 2-1.
Excellent, as always, Richard. Now I'll wrap up right back to you. Marco Morosi, brilliant save from Lukas Jukljevic.
Yeah, superb save. Speed of reactions, managing to get the smallest fingertip up onto the crossbar. It actually wasn't pointed out by the commentators at first. It was only about on the third or fourth replay that they actually realised that he got the faintest of touches. And in the end, it was good enough for a point.
You mentioned Alex Smithies. Sean Williams floated the ball onto around the 12-yard spot in that game to a Millwall and Cardiff. Matt Smith, very good in the air, but Smithy slightly misjudged it.
Yeah, he obviously thought he could come and claim it. We've all been there. It's that classic one where you realise halfway that you're not going to get there. And in the end, it looks quite soft when it's headed in. It is just a misjudgment. Very rare for Alex Smithy. He makes very, very few mistakes, but I'm sure he'll hold his hands up to this one.
Bart Bielkowski, by the way, in that game, made some very, very good saves yet again to keep Millwall in it. Great save from Harry Wilson, close range, reminiscent of that De Gea save at Anfield with his left foot a few years back. Joel Pereira, you mentioned as well, of Huddersfield, kind of felt like he was given a bit too much stick here, playing out from the back against Stoke. Now, it was a nice feint to fade the attacker initially, I thought. He made the pass to Richard Stearman, who had plenty of time and space, dilly-dallied with the ball, put Pereira right back in trouble by giving it back to him. Then Stearman knees it into his own net. So yes, Pereira might have made the error of not passing out effectively the second time out, but I don't think he was given too much of a chance.
No, I think, look, it's the way that Huddersfield want to play. So there are dangers with that. I think the other goal in that game as well, shot from about 20 yards, seemingly wasn't that far away from him. The bit that got me was actually more so the reaction of teammates. You know, you can sense the reaction of teammates as to how they maybe feel about a situation. I think there was a bit of disappointment, certainly, a couple of those moments. And in the end, it would be frustrating for Huddersfield to go to Stoke and score three goals in the way they have, and a very good performance all in all. To not come away with anything will obviously be very frustrating.
You mentioned the penalty in that Borough-Norwich game. James Tavernier, it was. And we saw a similar thing as well between Fulham and Everton. Cavallero hit it against his own foot. Both of those penalties, obviously, well, the Cavallero one going over the bar, Tavernier's going in, but being disallowed. No retakes. So we got a bit back after Sam Johnston's incident from the weekend. But Kieran Westwood, you mentioned as well, he's back in for Sheffield Wednesday. Tony Pulis has brought him back in. A bit of a wider story here as well with the comments that Pulis made prior to bringing Kieran Westwood back in, who wasn't going to be eligible initially until January, but some jiggery pokery has occurred there to allow him to come in. Dawson, Cam Dawson, 8 games this season. Joe Wildsmith, 11 games this season. Before Saturday, they'd conceded Sheffield Wednesday only 10 goals, which, even though they're in the relegation zone, is a lower number of goals than all but 6 of the other teams in the Championship this season. Westwood came in, made a bit of an error for the goal.
I want to touch on Tony Pulis's comments. I found them bizarre, really. I mean, I think he referred to them as the young lads, you know, which they're 25 and 26 respectively, and they're two top goalkeepers. And I don't know whether it's a case of wanting to gain a bit of favour with the fans. I know that Kieran Westwood is a popular figure amongst the fans. Maybe it was simply that, but I found his comments, I was a little bit disappointed with them personally. I've got no doubt the two goalkeepers in question would have been as well. And the goal itself, it was a punch. I think he would have wanted to have got a little bit more on the punch. Look, it's one of them. Sometimes you get away with it. More often than not, you get away with it. But of course, when it is returned and it ends up in a goal, then naturally people ask questions.
In League One, you mentioned Jack Bonham. He's saved 4 of the 5 penalties he's faced for Gillingham. So that is a very decent statistic. As is 100 up for Craig McGillivray, Portsmouth goalkeeper, has won his space back from Alex Bass, who came in last season. Great moment in this one was that Portsmouth were 4-0 up. Crew got a penalty. McGillivray conceded and smashed the post. He was furious. Love to see that.
love to see it when a goalkeeper munches the post. Yeah, no, big well done to Craig. That's quite an achievement. And as you mentioned, the fact that he has been out of the team, or was out of the team for a period of time, he's certainly come back very, very strong. And you touched on it, Jack Bonham, what a penalty save. Made a brilliant save as well from a free kick that he's tipped onto the bar. A lot of Gillingham fans telling me that he is their player of the season, and it's great to see that he is playing as well as he is.
In League 2, Vaclav Hladký, who you brought up last time out, so I'm going to bring him back up as well. Salford were 2-0 at the time at home to Bradford. Very decent double save from Clayton Donaldson and Austin Samuels.
Yeah, very good. I think that this is one of them where, had that second one gone in, people might have questioned the fact that he wasn't able to hold the first one. And this is the life of a goalkeeper, that you end up making the save. It's a great save. They end up scoring a goal. He probably would have been blamed slightly. But I think it was a very good first save in terms of how sharp he got down. Wasn't able to hold it. But what he showed was bravery and speed in order to get close enough to the second one to make the smother and in the end keep the ball out the net. Great double save.
And a save of the weekend contender. You mentioned him, Matt Gilkes, showed all of his 38 years to deny Tom Pett a second for Stevenage right at the death. A big win for Bolton.
Yeah, big save. And look, he's come in and talk about shoring up a team, just settling things down. And Billy Crellin obviously had a couple of tough games, certainly, it's fair to say. So for him to come in at the time, obviously something that has helped the team in a big way. And actually something that maybe you didn't expect was him still to be pulling off saves like this. It was more just to settle down the defence and have that older figure at the back. Well, actually, he showed that he's still got a lot to offer. And this was a fantastic save. Great agility, great athleticism. We say for somebody of his age, to be honest, even somebody in their mid-20s, if they make this save, we're still lauding it in the way that we are.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Couple of keeper capers to finish the EFL and non-league as it goes. Dean Gherkin is the first one, the Colchester United goalkeeper. Slightly different for keeper capers this time, but more so because of his reaction in conceding to Nicky Maynard of Mansfield.
Yeah, it's a strange one because it's a shot from distance that's gone over his head and just dipped in under the bar. Now, I don't know if it moved on him. I'm not too sure. But effectively, he's gone just to get the faintest of touch to tip it over the bar. But he's just misjudged it ever so slightly. And it's gone over his hands, under the bar, into the goal. But you could tell instantly that he was disappointed with himself, head in hands. And he was there for a good few seconds after the ball's nestled in the net. And you could sense that he was really, really upset with the situation. I feel a bit sorry for him. So I've said this way too many times, I feel, recently. But we have all been there where you've gone to tip it around the post. It's a reasonably comfortable one, for instance, or you feel it is. And for whatever reason, in that moment, you just misjudge it slightly and it goes in the corner and you cannot believe that you've done it. And it just felt like one of those moments.
Play the game though, Dean. Come on. You should know better, surely. You are showing everybody that you've just made an error.
It's funny you say that. I say this to some of the lads that I work with, is that, and maybe this isn't the sort of thing that I should be saying to younger goalkeepers, but of course, you are going to get blamed at times when it's not your fault. So if there's a way in which you can style something out, then I would always encourage you to do that. And actually, this is one of those moments that if he collapses on the floor and makes out as if he's tried to elaborately tip it over but just couldn't reach it, we probably don't ask as many questions. But the fact that he's held his head in his hands for such a long period of time, of course, you're going to question whether he could have done a little bit better.
And for those who are watching Wealdstone's entertaining draw with Sutton on BT Sport at the weekend, Harry Isted, clearance ricocheted off Omar Bugyal of Sutton into the top corner. Lovely finish.
Yeah, it was. It was a lovely finish. I felt for him here, and I know not many people would have been watching this, because I think it was at the same time as, what was the other game going on at this time? Might have been Man United, maybe. So, look, not many people watching it. I'll be honest, I watched the first 20 minutes, so I actually did see this. And they were 2-0 down, Wealdstone, came back 3-2 up, and then conceded with pretty much the last kick of the game for a 3-3 draw. So, really entertaining game. But horrible moment for him. Balls come back, good touch. Just taken so long to clear it. And you're watching it thinking, okay, he's waiting. He's obviously seeing if anything develops in front of him. It doesn't, at which point he decides to go long. And it's one of those where the striker's stretched, just trying to get something on it, and it hits the perfect part of his boot in order to fly back into the top corner. And I felt for him because it's a horrible moment. It's live on BT. You know, I'm sure there's not too many of their games are live each season. So it's a nice opportunity for him to impress. Of course, very good goalkeeper. I believe he was with Southampton when he was a little bit younger. I want to say he was with Stoke as well. Top young goalkeeper. So not a particularly nice moment for him. But in fairness to him, dusted himself off. I thought he was solid for the rest of the game. But yeah, not a particularly nice moment.
Right, Richard. Bit of fun to finish the pod. Here we go.
Orlando City! Wait a minute! Wait a minute, Alex Berry!
Right, you know what this is all about, right? You know what this is all about. Everybody listening, I'm sure, knows what this is all about. MLS playoff between Orlando City and New York City FC. Now, especially those listeners we have across the pond will be well aware of what is coming. The reason we're featuring this in such a way is more because of the commentary, which you can hear right there. It's brilliant. Comically brilliant. So we'll run through it. I'm not 100% sure what the name of that commentator is. I think it might be Dave Johnson. It might be John Strong. It might be one of the two, or maybe it's someone else. If you know, please do let us know. So, as we know, Pedro Galesi, the Orlando keeper, has saved the decisive penalty to send Orlando through. But as we also know, it turns out he's come off his line. He receives a second yellow card and he is dismissed. This is why we've chosen to go with the US commentary. Cue commentator.
Wow!
Unbelievable.
I can't believe it! Alejandro Berry, no puedo creer lo que acabo de ver!
The commentator then correctly presumes what will happen next with the event that defender Rodrigo Schlegel will replace Galesi.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but Schlegel's going to put on...
Sorry, what? sorry, who is that?
Schlegel's going to put on...
How is he pronouncing that name? It's ridiculous.
He's just gone German, was.
Now, what in the flaming Goliath is going on there?
Yeah, look, the whole thing was just insane. You know, the word unbelievable gets used too often, but it just felt like it was one thing after another after another. Obviously, the goalkeeper getting sent off initially, the fact that they couldn't bring on their sub-goalkeeper, the fact that the outfield player then goes in goal, the fact that they lost track of the penalties, and just when they're about to win it, then that one's saved, and then the outfield player that does go in goal makes the save and they go through. the whole thing. It was just incredible. One of the most amazing few minutes of footage that I've ever seen in my life.
It is a bugbear for you, though, isn't it? An outfielder going in goal and making the job look easy.
Hate it, because that's it. He's gone in and he's saying, by the way, a dreadful penalty. There's actually something to this, though. Like, I think psychologically, the person taking the penalty is thinking it's an outfield player in goal who obviously can't dive, like didn't dive for the two penalties that he faced. So he's gone way too close to the centre of the goal, like not wanting to miss, because of course it'd be ridiculous if you miss when an outfield player's in goal. So he's gone very central and given the outfield player a chance to make the save, which he obviously does. So yeah, I hate it. One of my biggest bugbears.
Have we got time for a quick rate my save?
Of course, we've always got time.
Scott Janus from Burton on Trent. He's playing for Burton Park Rangers Reserves against Miners Arms in the Burton Sunday League. So I'm going to show you this as we go. There's no commentary, sadly, but this is the save, and you can do your punditry as I play it to you, Richard.
Okay, I haven't seen this save yet. The ball is in midfield, and it strikes going in the top corner. Oh, what a save. Top hand as well. Yeah, it's a fantastic save. So to try and describe this, so the ball is on the volley. It's in midfield, on the volley, going into the top corner. And Scott's got up to his left. So it's a top hand save. It's the fact that he's got a quick step in. And actually the step for me is vital because that's allowed him to explode up to his left. And the technique is fantastic. You know, I think if he goes with the other hand, I don't think he makes a save here. And it is full stretch, top hand, fantastic save. Top save. I think if we see this in the Premier League, we're still gushing over it. It's an excellent save.
Yes, very good save, Scott. Thank you very much for sending that in. And if you want your save rated by Richard Lee, very easy. Hashtag rate my save on Twitter or via email. We've had a fair few of these in, Richard. So looking forward to carrying these on as the weeks go on. That is it for this week. We've got a little ending. We didn't mention this during the Manchester City Spurs game, but something I picked up, I was in my kitchen whilst watching this game and I thought, have I just heard what I thought I heard? I rewound it and here you go. Listen to this. It's quite hard to hear, but this is Hugo Lloris in the game between Spurs and Man City at the weekend. Did you get that?
I heard it. Very, very faint.
That was a corner that came in. You'll just hear it just here.
Keep us away.
There you go.
Even in the Premier League, you see, this is something that all goalkeepers have in common. There's at least once a game that we all say, keep us away.
Richard, thank you.
Thank you, as ever.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Over to Hugo.